listening to The Cowboy Pages. Come with me, Christy Crowley, as I travel America in search of cowboy poets and their wisdom. Today's book, Elko, Nevada, Chapter 8, 35 miles an hour in an 80-mile zone. My conversation with poets Rodney Nelson and D.W. Grothy.
Now, don't blame me. The blame should fall on the guilty, I'd insist. And the one who caused this grief for me was that ag economist. He claimed my style was obsolete and that mode no longer pays. If I wish to stay in business, I must yield to modern ways. I must keep records every day despite the mental strain, must calculate my feed costs, know my critter's rate of gain. Well, the figures I collected, they could drive sane men berserk. Took the pleasure out of ranching and it doubled all my work. I measured something every day like what every critter ate. Beauty wouldn't save a brood cow if her EPDs weren't great. Then we frame-sized all the chickens and we speed-bred all the cats. And to maximize production, kept blue heeler biting stats. Records now became a passion. Nothing else was now much fun. Everything I had was measured. That is everything but one. I didn't want to do it. What else am I to say? I started up my pickup truck and filled it up with hay. I never had a clue that day that what I did was wrong when I stopped and asked the missus if she'd like to ride along. She inquired of my intentions. All right, I lied that day. I'm going to New Salem just to weigh this load of hay. Well, I checked the readout on the scale as I drove up with my bride. Then I told her, sweet as sugar, that she'd have to step outside. She hesitated not a bit. She even acted glad. It was when I checked the scale again that she knew that she'd been had. Have you ever known the fury of 100 rabid dogs or been in a metal building where they're castrating hogs? Oh, you should have heard the screaming and you should have heard her wail the day I weighed the missus on the elevator scale.
That was Rodney Nelson reciting his poem, The Elevator Scale. As you can tell, Mr. Nelson loves to tell a joke, and he's good at it. Rodney, D.W., and I sat down, started chatting and laughing, and eventually our conversation turned to the making of poems. Rodney took the lead, describing his process.
How do I happen to get an idea to write a poem? I am not a very prolific writer in the first place, and I mostly try to write something that's entertainment value, and once in a while I struggle for an idea, and once in a while you get a gift. Something happens to you that you realize you can make a story of. Like visiting with Frank Gleason is how I got to thinking about this. And I love the love poems. I like them. There's several of those S.O.R. Barker poems I like, and Bruce Kiskaden's That Letter, and some of those poems I like. So I kind of like to, I like the idea of the bashful guy. So that's why I did that one. But mostly it's a little gift. You get some kind of a funny idea and that you realize you can build a story around it. Mm-hmm. One time I was in Wyoming and I went in for a breakfast and they brought me a pancake this big around, about that thick, and you could stab a fork right in the middle of it and it's going to stand there. And I laughed about that pancake all the way home. I laughed about it. I got to thinking about it. And it took, maybe it was a year later, because I should have stopped right along the road right there. But I finally wrote the story about that pancake. But
you should do that poem. That's a great poem.
Well, I don't know if it's great or not. But,
yeah, I think so. It's fun.
Yeah. Be great.
And it's one of the rare ones that's based in truth.
It's one of the rare ones. It's probably one of the rare ones I could recite without looking at it ahead of time and thinking it in my mind, but I probably could. You don't want me to recite it right now, do you?
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
Well, this is how it is. I would go to this rodeo in KC, Wyoming. I went there for years. I got to know the local people. It was just a wonderful experience. Great storytellers, wonderful sheep herders and cowboys that came out of those Bighorn Mountains, and I got to know lots of them, and they're wonderfully entertaining people. And I, at first, I went home on Sunday. Then I learned you wait till Monday morning, because the old guys, the old cowboys are going to be in that cafe in the morning, and there's wonderful stories that would float around on Monday morning. So I walked in there, and Bill, my friend Bill, who's Bill Larson, he's a great cowboy. I knew him as a saddle bronc rider when we were young in college, and he picked up broncs and he raises bucking bulls and all that kind of stuff. And Bill says, why don't you order pancakes? He said, order a stack. So this is what happened. They brought me this huge, I'll tell you, the poem is the story. Well, the rodeo was over. All the Bronx were trucked away. I just thought I'd have some breakfast before I left KC that day. So I walked into the feed rack, like a hungry fellow would, sat down by some cowboys and asked them what was good. Well, Bill suggested pancakes, told me order two or three. But the waitress heard us talking and she smirked disdainfully. She was kind of cute, but mouthy. And she told me, listen, hon, you're too puny for that order, so I'll only bring you one. Well, I didn't contradict her, but I smoldered in my seat. I felt like saying, sweetheart, you have never seen me eat. So I sat there plumb indignant, for I didn't realize the flapjack she would bring me would be Boone and Crockett size. Now, this was the biggest hotcake I'd ever seen displayed. It looked kind of like a frisbee that a buffalo bull had made. Well, I greased her up with butter till I used up all the tray. But like piddle on a snowbank, it just seemed to melt away. Confident that I could eat it, I'd have taken any bet till I used a quart of syrup just to get that sucker wet. Well, I started at the south end and I grazed her back and forth. Undaunted by the task at hand, I ate my way up north. The first half went down easy. I had no desire to stop, but like a mountain climber's nightmare, got tougher towards the top. Then all at once it struck me, and I thought aloud, alas, let's say I get around this beast and the darn thing will not pass. Well, I tried once more with vigor. I would not concede defeat, till at last I muttered weakly that this monster had me beat. If you're ever in Wyoming, want some value for your buck, swing into KC's feed rack, order cakes, and try your luck. Just don't brag that you can eat one, for you won't consume it all, unless your mother is a grizzly or your dad's a simmental. I suppose there's some could do it if they gave this task a crack, but you'd best be coyote hungry before you order up a stack.
Oh my God. I told you it was a good one.
Wow, that's great.
Well, Moa, you're making me feel special here, sweetheart.
You should feel special. That's really great.
It really is.
There is so much humor in your poetry. And where does that come from? Are you just a funny person?
No, I'm really quite drab and dreary. But
you seem like it.
I grew up in a community. It was like a melting pot where I grew up. There were many different ethnic people that lived in this little town in northern North Dakota. There were ethnic Germans to the north. There were Germans from Russia to the south. The Norwegians held the river. There were a bunch of Icelandic people in the next neighboring towns, and there were outlaws from Missouri, or I don't know where they were from, that lived over here. But when you think of characters, people that were characters, boy, that fellow was a character, that lady was a character. We had 35, 40 of them. Everybody, I mean, those kind of people existed all over. And I thought the world was that way, but it's not necessarily true. But I grew up around those characters. And I rodeoed for many years, and cowboys tend to be wonderful storytellers, especially the older guys, but when they hung around the rodeos for maybe, the old guys were around Madison Square Gardens for 28 days. They got into lots of mischief. They did a lot of things that made great stories, and they perfected their art because they had all that time to kill and all the hours on the road driving. So I've been around those kind of people all my life, and it's bound to wear off on you. And there was a guy from Montana. His name was Stan Howe. He said one time, nobody says, let's all go out tonight and have a bad time, you know? And I like to have fun. I really do. And if I'm around you, well, I'd want to torture you or tease you or something and have some fun in some way or another. And that's just kind of the way I am. And that's how I... And I, my mother was that way. My mother was a wonderful storyteller. She loved poetry, just loved it, and could recite lots of it into her very dying days when she was 96 years old. So I suppose it all... rubs off on you.
Sure, yeah. So I heard the two of you drove in together. Is that true?
Yeah, several years we've done that.
Wow, it's a lot of hours on the road.
Yeah, we don't get bored. You know, the guy in the back seat does. I'm tired right now. We're damn fine. Okay. We're both full of stories.
Yeah. I shouldn't cut into his deal, but I've got to say this: the first time we traveled together, we'd known each other several years. But it was, you know, hi Rod, hi D-Dub, you know, how's things going? We really didn't know each other. Then when we just came down here together, we had this wonderful conversation. It's 1,130 miles down.
Go straight through.
Whoa.
So, but then on the way home, as we got closer and closer to home, the car got slower and slower.
We're on the interstate. I mean, we're down to 20. People are passing us like we're literally standing still. So I lean over, I look, and he's doing 35 miles an hour in an 80 mile an hour zone. And it's
I knew we had to slow it up to get these stories in. You know?
Yes, man. Well, that's when we pulled in, because I drive down to Medora, North Dakota, to meet up with him. He lives east of there, about the same distance I do north. And he just sort of, we pulled in there, and I remember you getting out saying, you know, I wish we had another 400 miles to go. Yeah, really, it was just that, because we weren't even remotely out of stories.
That's great.
Yeah, it was
that's
a lot of fun.
Great. So, D.W., of course, I have some poems of yours that I love, but it would be great to have you.
Really short ones.
Well, you know, I love 50 a day.
The which one?
50 a day.
Yeah, I don't do that one anymore because it's just...
You're done with it.
Well, I'm not done with it. I like it, but there's a limit to one in, one out.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have probably about 50 poems memorized that I use.
Would you be up to doing something?
Yeah, I don't care. Can you pick another one?
Well, why don't you pick something that you... I mean, I love the bunny poem, too, but you probably don't do that anymore.
Oh, I do that all the time.
You
I have
do?
To. I can't do the bunny poem without somebody coming up afterwards and said, you know, one time we were driving, it happened to me yesterday, and I haven't even done the poem yet. These two gals come up to me and goes, last year when you were here, you did the bunny poem, and on our trip over here, we came over this hill, and it was nothing but bunnies everywhere. They were flying up in there. I don't know how many they killed, but she said, then we get in, and we catch you, and you do the bunny poem. She said, he must be following us. Well, and see, and it's a true story, because I was coming back with, Jerry Dabrowski. He's a friend of ours. And she and I were coming back from a show I did in Kanab, Utah. And that's a long haul from my front door. So, because I'm 50 miles from Canada, 10 miles from North Dakota. And in Montana, I get to say that. it's the story. Actually, the poem, the only thing that isn't true in the story, I make the poem a Chevy, and it was a Buick. And a lot of times when I introduce it, I go, you rhyme Buick? Fine with me. You know? And you get people who come, how about Puick? You know, he Puicked up. And I said, no, I want a real rhyme. So, the bunny poem. That's the other thing, too. I hate titles. I get done with a poem or a song, I could care less what it's called. Because I just put the thing away, I don't want it. So I have a lot of them that go, the bunny poem, the coffee song. Real basic. So anyway, if I can remember it. Driving through the midnight hour, clipping down the trail, we was headed back from Utah on the last legs of our tail. 20 hours driving hard from down the old southwest, why we was more than plenty tired, and our brains was craving rest. Then we finally hit the Black Hills, and the end was nigh in sight, so we caught ourselves a second wind and flew back in the night. Now from Belfouche up to Bowman, that's a mighty lonesome haul. They must keep you company, besides that haunting coyote call. Oh, the moon was full upon us. The prairie was aglow, when out the corner of my vision come a scene that froze my soul. There was bunnies in the ditches, neath the sagebrush, in the air. There was millions, there was billions, there were bunnies everywhere. Their beady little eyeballs was glaring mean and hard. Oh, I could smell the trouble brewing when the first one rammed the car. Suicidal little buggers was on a lemming kick. I thought, even for a bunny, this is getting pretty sick. Well, they careened out on the highway, not to care for life and limb. Why, we was turning furry bunnies into prairie cherubim. They was wrapped around the axles. They was gummed up in the tires. Parts flipped up on the engine, on the manifolds and wires. Others whacked against the floorboards after kissing that old bumper. Now I know why Disney called old Bambi's bunny buddy Thumper. It was bowling in the Badlands with a steel rake at every throw, a bunny Armageddon in a P.T. Barnum show, till at last they started thinning down as Ludlow slipped away. And we crossed that old Dakota line in one bunged-up Chevrolet. I breathed an everlasting sigh, a knowing that from here, heck, all we had to worry about was open range and deer. There you go.
Oh, I love it.
That's exactly what it was.
I just love it. Bunny Armageddon.
Oh, they make
it.
That's great. That Armageddon deal,
isn't that great?
That's wonderful.
It's so, and it's just funny and disgusting all at the same time. Just love it. So you also write songs.
Yep.
And I'm curious, how do you know something is a poem and something is a song? And when you write songs, what comes first? What is that? What is that process for you?
You know, the words or the lyrics? Never mind. You know, there is no set criteria. I know it's a poem if I'm writing it. And I know it's, if it's a song. If I'm doing a you know, if it's going to be lyrics or if it's going to be poem. It's just something inside knows it. And as far as what comes first, really, it's more often than not, it'll be the lyrics. Because I have, I'm not kidding, like a million melodies in my head. Huh. All the time. I hear them, you know. Which maybe we shouldn't put that on there because they'll be coming to take me away. But they're there. And if I'm close to a piano, because that's my primary instrument, I do a lot of writing on the piano, and then I just put it over on the guitar. So it's, yeah, I don't know how to say it. I get, you know, the inspiration is the same. I always carry these little books, and I write down when a thought comes. When an idea comes, I, you know, quick put it down in the book. Because my theory is the muse gives you an idea. You have approximately 3 to 5 seconds to do something with it. Otherwise, it gives it to somebody else. Uh-huh. You know? And I think it's true because you can't try and remember it because you won't. Because if you're out fencing, doing whatever you're doing for the day's work, something will distract you and it'll be gone. Mm-hmm. So you write it down. And then when I get home, then it's done. It's kind of the same with some melodies, too. Hmm. I'll think of a melody when I'm out in the prairie someplace or working the breaks, whatever. And I have done this before. Well, I don't have a landline anymore. I'm kind of screwed now. But I used to call up, and then I'd hum it in, so I'd have it at home on a message.
Wow.
I don't know how that works.
That's great.
Yeah.
Huh. Did you learn to play the piano as a kid?
My mom told me that I started asking for a piano when I was 4. And I finally got one when I was in second grade, beginning of second grade, I guess. And so I took lessons until I got out of high school.
But you didn't have one in your house before that, obviously. So
nope.
Where were you hearing piano that you do
probably
know?
In my head. I don't know. I just, music and poetry. I have, my mom saved poems that I'd written before I could do cursive. So, you know, that's first or second grade. And
that's
they're small. She saved them. They'll be burned with me in the end. Yeah, we won't save those. Actually, it was about, I think it was 2 or 3 poems and a short story, which, oddly enough, was a Western. Seriously. I mean, it was really short story, too. When we're talking short stories, this is a short story.
So were you born into cowboying? Is that something you came to later?
No, I'm born into rural life, but I moved. I was going with a gal from Bainville, Montana at the time, and I moved over there. Ended up buying my little house on a handshake with a guy I'd met twice, and did a quick claim deed with me. Yeah.
And you still
batching.
I
just stayed there. What's that?
You're still batching over there.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, sometimes things don't work out, but they work out for the best. Mm-hmm. And when I moved across there, then I just didn't feel like driving back to Williston or going over to Sydney, which are the closest cities. I am working and driving back and forth, and I ended up, you know, it doesn't take long before somebody says, you want to do some fencing? We're working some cows here. You're gonna. And I went, yeah. So I just went cowboying, and yeah, for about a year it was just gradual, and then finally it just, yeah. That's wonderful, because I'm off by myself a lot.
Did you ask us how we get our inspiration?
Kinda? I did. Yeah.
You know, and I'm not prolific writer, but when you talk about this rabbit deal. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the vision came to me, and it's a possibility. And, of course, I don't have a notebook to write it down, so I'll forget about this. But I thought about the first decent pickup I had. It was an 89 Dodge Diesel. And I'm thinking of the gradual destruction of that pickup from wildlife. It was first a pheasant, then a deer took one fender, another deer took the other fender. I still had a good hood, and I could still see that doggone wild turkey waiting there did a kamikaze act on my head, and it was gone. And then I built this, had this giant guard built, you know, in the front, so I wouldn't wreck it when I fixed it all up. And but I mean, that this comes to me, and of course I'll forget about it. I'll probably never write that, but I could make a good story out of it.
Well, now we have it for posterity, recorded forever. Yeah.
This idea.
I've been thinking a lot about friendship lately. I find myself in a place and a time when it feels as though friends are harder to find and even harder to hold on to. Of course, I know this is because families grow, moves happen, jobs get more complicated, marriages need attention, but I can't help miss that afternoon so long ago when my friend and I were laughing so hard we had to pull the car over because we couldn't see through our tears. I don't even remember what we were laughing at all these years later, but I will forever recall how good it felt to share pure, silly joy with someone I cherished. Why are friends so important? Sure, it's because they know us and love us in spite of it. But maybe it's also because they're the people who keep us active in our humanity. We have to stay invested in these relationships through action and attention. Bloodlines and marriage licenses won't keep our friends involved. Only loving them, and their loving us, does that. I adore the thought of Rodney and DW driving all the way together, swapping stories and sharing laughs. What a gift to give one another. Time, the open road, ears to listen, and a willing heart. We may not be able to offer much more to our friends on a day-to-day basis, but a willing heart. However, maybe that's enough. Maybe it's the try that counts, and what can keep friendships alive when the embers want to fade. I'm thankful DW and Rodney reminded me that when the stories are good and the friendship's strong, we should all try to slow down to 35 miles an hour and see if we can stretch the time. And I'm thankful to you for listening. To learn more about our show, Cowboy Poets, or to see pictures of my travels, visit thecowboypages.com.